Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck.
And I'm Caroline Ballard. Coming up, we'll bring you a special edition of Open Spaces, where we examine the legacy of the Matthew Shepard murder 20 years later. We'll hear from three people who were involved in the case and what they think happened.
Based on the evidence that I saw, I don't have any reason to think it was anything more than killing him because he was gay.
Wyoming is known as the equality state, but we'll talk to LGBTQ folks about the homophobia they encounter on a daily basis.
It was like a two-minute conversation, probably. And that was that. We knew they didn't want us.
And we'll find out how the arts have become so intertwined with the legacy of Matthew Shepard.
Those stories and more ahead on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck.
And I'm Caroline Ballard. 20 years ago this weekend, Matthew Shepard encountered Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson at the Fireside Bar in Laramie. McKinney told police that he noticed that Shepard had money and decided to rob him. He admitted that he thought Shepard would be an easy target because he was small in stature and appeared to be gay. McKinney told law enforcement authorities that he convinced Shepard to join them by claiming that he was gay. Henderson told police that he drove while McKinney spoke to Shepard in a feminine voice. But McKinney said Shepard put his hand near his genitals, which enraged him. He told Shepard he was being robbed and demanded his wallet. He punched Shepard and started hitting him with a .357 Magnum handgun and directed Henderson to what was then an abandoned area next to the Sherman Hills subdivision on the east side of town. Shepard was tied to a fence, beaten, and left alone. Eventually, Shepard died, and McKinney and Henderson would face a number of charges, including murder. The prosecutor initially sought the death penalty in the case, but the Shepherds asked that the death penalty be withdrawn after McKinney was convicted. Here's a montage of our coverage from that time.
A couple of very sick and twisted people caused something to happen that nobody in Wyoming accepts. It's that simple.
These kind of hate crimes need to stop. And, it's ridiculous. How would you like to be beaten to death just because you liked boys? You know, it's ridiculous.
The focus here is the death of a young man. And what we're trying to do is maintain our focus as to that. And the evidence that we've obtained, both physical and as through statements, and that's what we're focusing on. I would hope that people would try to stay away from political agendas and any other personal agendas they may have.
I noticed that his right eye was open, his left eye was closed shut. The only place that he didn't have any blood on him on his face was what appeared to be where he'd been crying down his face. I noticed his ear, right ear, was not intact.
Matthew was in the center of the truck seat. When they were passing Walmart at that time, they initiated an attack away at least 2 to 3 times with the fist and once with the pistol, possibly twice, and demanded the wallet at that point. They made the statement, guess what, we're not gay. You're going to get jacked. It's Gay Awareness Week.
We've already got laws in place to punish the individuals that killed this boy. That was wrong. But that boy's lifestyle is also wrong.
Gay and lesbian groups hope anti-homosexual fear will not diminish people's outrage over the death of Matthew Shepard. Denise DePearson of the group Equality Colorado says they expect the so-called homosexual panic defense to be used in the trials of the two men accused of fatally beating Shepard last fall.
Did you or anyone else find any evidence of torture to Mr. Shepard?
That's torture, sir.
In your opinion, that's what you're saying, is the blunt trauma to the head?
18 times, bruising to the groin area, yeah.
The biggest question is if prosecutors can find a jury in Albany County that will give someone the death penalty. It's never happened before. And in a case earlier this year, a jury failed to give someone the death penalty in Albany County for his involvement in killing a prison guard. Henderson's attorney, Wyatt Skaggs, is a courtroom veteran who apparently likes his chances in Laramie. Skaggs decided against having the case tried in another county, despite having changed venues in other murder cases in the past.
That was one of his biggest fears, was that they would want to try and vindicate Laramie because Laramie has been tarred with this national brush. And he said that the media has, quote, literally injected into our community a feeling of guilt. And he wanted to know if any jurors would make their decision because they felt guilty about it and wanted to make some sort of national statement.
You know, Matthew stood for something, and that something was tolerance, a tolerance of people. And she told me it would be wrong at this stage of the proceedings if our motives were revenge instead of justice. How ironic. The two people that gave Matthew Shepard life give some type of pity to a person that had murdered their son.
More than a year ago, our son Matthew was murdered because he was gay. He was a victim of a brutal crime motivated by hatred. The outcome of this trial will never bring Matthew back to us, but we believe that justice was served today.
From the time they learned about the Shepard attack, it was a busy time for Laramie law enforcement and the legal community as they dealt with the two people accused of murdering Matthew Shepard. The case had intense media scrutiny and international interest that overwhelmed residents of Laramie. Wyoming Public Radio's Bob Beck caught up with three people who were very closely involved in the case: a police investigator, a judge, and a defense attorney, who discussed their memories and what they think happened.
Albany County Sheriff Dave O'Malley first heard about Matthew Shepard the night he was beaten. After Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson left an unconscious Shepard, they came back to town. But when they arrived, they got into another altercation, and McKinney hit one of them with the same gun they used to beat Shepard. Officers arrived and found a Matthew Shepard credit card in McKinney's truck. They also found an extremely bloody gun. O'Malley said it all came together the next day.
When the young man riding a bicycle out near Sherman Hills crashed and ultimately found Matthew tied to the fence, the first deputies that were on the scene found a University of Wyoming identification card laying next to Matthew that had his picture and his name on it.
O'Malley sighs as he looks at pictures of Shepard's head bashed in and covered with blood.
It was a concentrated effort to, you know, hit him in the head. He had traumatic injuries that I've only seen in high-impact car crashes.
It was suggested that Shepard's murder was a hate crime, and throngs of media, activists, and others descended on Laramie. Former District Court Judge Jeff Dinnell had been in Laramie for 2 years and was unprepared for the attention. The crime part was fine. The problem was the media.
The first day that I really realized, I think, that this was going to be more than a regional sort of case was when the defendants made their initial appearance in my courtroom, because Judge Castor didn't have room in the old courtroom in the basement at the courthouse. And I sort of poked my head through the door to see what was going on at the time, and it was chaos.
There were cameras, media sitting in places reserved for attorneys. Dinnell called it out of control, and they quickly realized they needed a plan for the media. He remembers completely inaccurate news stories and reporters who were rude.
Russell Henderson's grandmother, Lucy Thompson, walked out of the courthouse one day, and she was surrounded by a scrum of reporters, probably 50, that hounded her out the door and all the way to her car. And Lucy Thompson was a nice lady who did not deserve that kind of treatment.
At the time, Jason Tangeman was a public defender who was assigned to Aaron McKinney. He was aware of the media and heard talk that it was a hate crime, but he was focused on the task at hand.
This was really a death penalty case, and as such, that's really what we were focusing on.
Trying to keep him alive and not get the death penalty.
Correct.
The goal was to tell the jury that McKinney snapped when Shepard put his hand near his groin, and that the murder was not planned. An ongoing debate in Laramie is whether or not this was a hate crime. McKinney and Henderson were charged with murder, kidnapping, and aggravated robbery. Others have alternative theories about what happened. Tangeman says he believes that the case was accurately charged by the prosecution and thinks alternative theories about what happened are wrong.
Any belief that this is a drug deal gone bad?
None.
Any belief that they had ever known each other before this?
No evidence that they knew each other. If someone saw them both at a gathering or a party, I guess that would surprise me a little bit. It's possible, but it would surprise me because I just don't think those two people were running around in the same circles at that point in time.
In fact, Tangeman says McKinney frequently told them in meetings that he didn't know Shepard. O'Malley has been on record many times saying that Shepard was the victim of a hate crime. When it comes to whether Shepard was a drug dealer or was on meth, O'Malley says there was no evidence.
We did a very meticulous search of Matthew's apartment. There wasn't one indication of meth use or possession or anything surrounding that.
Judge Donnell says he's read books and articles on alternative theories and says his view on what happened hasn't changed.
Based on the evidence that I saw, even in the pretrial hearings and that sort of thing, I don't have any reason to think it was anything more than killing him because he was gay.
All three say it's surprising the case is still being talked about 20 years later, but they all agree that Shepard's murder has changed the dialogue about LGBTQ issues in the state for the better. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Bob Beck.
When we return, reflections on the case from longtime Laramie residents and high schoolers who hadn't even been born at the time of the murder. This is Open Spaces. Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Caroline Ballard.
And I'm Bob Beck. Matthew Shepard's murder was a shock to everyone in the city of Laramie, but especially the gay and lesbian couples living there. One couple was especially close to the crime. Julie Heggie was the county coroner and attended Matthew Shepard's autopsy. Her partner at the time was Gail Woodson, a victim's advocate. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards sat down with them to remember when Heggie got a strange phone call at 3 in the morning. She said it was the only time in her long career that she ever got a call concerning someone who hadn't yet died.
I was not given a name or any details about it at all. And then the phone conversation ended. And so being perplexed, we had a middle-of-the-night conversation about what that was, what that meant, and honestly, we were confused. We couldn't figure that out at all. And so the next day, I went to a press conference, and with law enforcement present, me as the county coroner, and honestly was still in the dark as to why I had been called in for any of this.
Were they calling it a hate crime at that point?
Absolutely not. The first time that I heard anything about a hate crime was Gail and I were at the gym when the courthouse was still in business. And Gail happened to see it on national television. And then everything seemed to kind of fall into place and make a little more sense to us.
Things really blew up after that. There were the days it was incredibly upsetting and difficult for us as soon as that first phone call came through, and then as everything unfolded. We had been out to dinner and left the restaurant and just had headed down the sidewalk. We were just walking beside each other, and someone came charging up to us and started screaming slurs at us and calling us dykes, and we had no idea who the person was. It was very odd. And we had a number of incidents like that. I remember a few weeks after it all happened, we were getting a hay delivery. We had a small ranch south of town. And Julie and I were both standing there, and she was getting ready to hand him a very large check for this large amount of hay. And as the guy took it, he started talking about Matthew Shepard. He said, "All I know is he got whatever he deserved." you know? And we were giving him money. We were customers of his.
And he knew that you were a couple.
Well, he knew we lived there together. It's like, and we ran that ranch together. Who knows what he did with that? We weren't close friends, but it was so stunning. And it was, you know, not realizing there were reasons why we were closeted back then. We knew that you could lose your job, you could lose your life, you could be in danger. We'd had friends who'd been through horrible things. And so we were living with that all along. But I don't think we understood that our own neighbors and the people we were doing business with had this kind of hatred and animosity. And that sort of thing happened a lot and didn't happen before Matthew was murdered.
Honestly, my own opinion is that those people were always there, but they were for some reason becoming more vocal than afterwards. And I don't know why that would be the case, because beforehand, as Gail said, I think I was probably more closeted. I didn't ever mean to be closeted. I didn't feel I ever had a reason to be closeted. I just lived my life and was who I was and didn't feel a need to tell everybody about it. But I would have to say that since that time, I make a point of I don't hide who I am from anyone, and I'll spend the rest of my life making sure that everyone knows my sexual orientation and speak that truth to anyone.
I served here in Albany County. I served as the director of the Victim Witness Program for a couple of years, and had actually been let go just a couple of months or less. It was just a few weeks before Matthew was murdered. And in a very unusual and uncomfortable way, and I had a young staff at the time, they were all absolutely convinced that I had been fired because I had been outed as a lesbian. I've always done activism work, so I've always been very out with all of my own issues and done my work that way. It was very upsetting to everyone. So the entire staff walked when I was fired.
Personally, I think nowhere you go, when you tell people where you're from, they know where Laramie, Wyoming is because of the Matthew Shepard murder. Do I think that the people locally, a lot of people would like to say it wasn't a hate crime? That, yes, I think it's been covered over in that regard. Because my own opinion is that it absolutely was a hate crime.
What I've understood is that it was quite a terrible beating. And I just wonder how you have dealt with, you know, witnessing that over the course of your life.
Well, of course, it was probably more traumatic to me than a lot of things I've seen. I've seen a lot of traumatic things over the years being in this line of work. But definitely more traumatic to me because it hit closer to home, because I'm of the same community, and that could happen to a person only because of their sexual orientation. To me, it affected me. It will always affect me in some way.
So I had worked for a couple of years with law enforcement, sheriff's office and the police department, very closely. There's no doubt in my mind, especially the leadership at that time, Gary Pulse, who was the sheriff, and Rob DeBree, who was lead detective in the sheriff's office, and Dave O'Malley, who was lead detective at the time in the police department. And those three men, they changed profoundly as a result of this, on a personal level.
Well, I always felt like I was treated very well by all aspects of law enforcement in my role as the coroner. But after all this happened with Matthew, there was just a closeness that people had with one another. Every time I ran into Rob DeBree, he would just give me a hug, you know. It just made a difference in lives.
Well, thank you guys both so much for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
That was Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards speaking with former County Coroner Julie Heggie and former victims advocate Gail Woodsum.
Longtime residents of Laramie have vivid memories of the Matthew Shepard murder. But 20 years later, high school students are learning about it as a piece of history. Wyoming Public Radio's London Homer Wambeam listened in as a class of students tried to imagine what it was like.
A dozen upperclassmen sit around a table on the stage of the Laramie High School Theater.
This theater class is studying and performing The Laramie Project, a play about the controversy surrounding the murder of gay University of Wyoming student Matthew Shepard. Most of these students grew up in the town where it happened, but many of them were unfamiliar with the details of the case. Because of this, Senior Rachel Hogan is concerned about making an accurate portrayal.
Are there certain things that when we perform this that you, people that you don't want us to interpret wrong or like? For us to get it as accurate as possible.
Oh, that's such a nice question. I don't know. I think you're going to do a great job. I think, like, it's got its own mind and heart now, you know?
Hogan is asking Nicole Bondurant. Bondurant is an English teacher at the school, but she's here today because she was one of the key people involved in blocking out anti-gay protesters during Shepard's funeral and trial. After Bondurant speaks, the students discuss their personal understandings of Matthew Shepard. Senior Isabella Polidora grew up without realizing there was any stigma around homosexuality and remembers when one of her friends came out to her.
She was scared because of Matthew Shepard, and I asked my parents like what the whole deal was, because when I grew up it wasn't a bad thing, and so I didn't understand why someone else would say, well, I'm scared because people think it could be a bad thing, and I was like, well, how? And then they explained to me that he was brutally murdered, and that was just shocking.
Laramie High School Theater Program Director Michael Hansey is teaching the Laramie Project to Polidora and her classmates. He says that over the years, he's observed his students becoming more open about their sexual orientations.
And I think a large part of it has to do with the cultural shift that happened after the incident with Matthew Shepard.
Other students simply didn't realize what an impact Shepard's murder had on Laramie and the nation until they studied the Laramie Project. Senior Cooper Jackson says he heard Shepard's name a lot growing up.
It's like oversaturation. I just kind of got used to it, that it was a thing in Laramie. But reading this, it really brought back into the front that it's not a Laramie issue. It's a nationwide issue. It just so happened to have started in Laramie, and that's what we're known for, sadly.
The legacy of Shepard's murder has been divisive within the Laramie community. Some people argue that he was not murdered for being gay, but that it was a dispute over drugs. Some want to hold Shepard up as a martyr, while others want to keep it in the past. Hansey wasn't teaching in Laramie at the time of the murder, so he asked Bondurant about the divide in class.
What was it like when they say the city was divided? When they say that there were two camps, and one people say it was a hate crime, the other one says it wasn't?
I don't think that happened till later.
Bondurant says that she didn't notice the divisiveness until a few years after the murder.
And it's gotten stronger because as time goes by, it's easier to have multiple truths.
That tension continues to be an issue even among high school students. Some don't take Shepard's story seriously and use it to tease others. High school senior Isaiah Manlove says he learned about Shepard from his mother when he came out as gay, but apart from that...
The only thing I ever learned about Matthew Shepard were from the jokes that I'd hear from some of my friends saying, you know, some of them towards me, you know, and I don't think they understand either.
That kind of teasing doesn't happen in Hansey's class. He says the students performing the Laramie Project were given a choice to participate, and they're all within an LGBT-friendly social group. Many of the students in the class are gay. But the conversation could get messier if Hansey was teaching it to a more diverse class.
If I were to teach this, the play, to, you know, a different set of students at the high school, the different social set, I think it would have a very different, we'd have different comments, we'd have different feelings about it.
Hansey says he can't think of any teachers that incorporate Matthew Shepard into their regular curriculum, and that even his class wasn't always the obvious place for students to learn about it. For one thing, Hansey admits that until recently, he was not tolerant or accepting of homosexuality. Then, 3 years ago, his daughter came out as gay.
Homosexuality and being gay was something that was frowned upon, not something that was tolerated, accepted. But the more that I came to understand her as a person and my personal relationship with God, my views, I would say, changed 180 degrees.
Hansey says that even if his daughter hadn't come out, he probably still would have had his class perform the Laramie Project. But now, he's better equipped to teach it.
I think now that I understand where they're coming from, I understand the play better. Before, I don't know that I would have understood it completely.
Hansey says he wants his students to come away from the class, understanding there is a difference between simply tolerating someone and accepting them. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm London Homer Wambim.
Coming up, some believe the tech industry could be the answer to Wyoming's economic woes, but some of those same people say the state has an image problem. This is Open Spaces. This is Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Bob Beck.
And I'm Caroline Ballard. In order to convince tech companies to set up shop in Wyoming, some believe there needs to be a statewide anti-discrimination law on the books. That would change state law to provide protections to LGBTQ people that other states already have. Supporters say such a law will resolve a perception problem the state has had since the murder of Matthew Shepard. Wyoming Public Radio's Maggie Mullen has more.
On a busy corner in downtown Cheyenne, there's a few of the things you would expect to find in Wyoming, like a horse-drawn carriage and historic buildings. Inside one of them, there's an old-fashioned, manually operated brass elevator. On the fourth floor, there are black and white photographs of old Wyoming, but maybe not of the things you would expect.
This is a lesbian wedding from the 1930s.
That's Sarah Burlingame. She's the executive director of the LGBTQ advocacy group Wyoming Equality. The photos are hanging up in her corner office.
Look at her hand clenching her neck. Mm-hmm. And look at this minxy little girl with her cigarette. They're all smoking like Lord's bastards, you know? They're all like breaking hard.
Burlingame says the photos are meant to serve as a reminder.
We've always been here.
We, meaning queer people, and here, meaning Wyoming. Burlingame moved to the state 20 years ago this fall.
We moved here in August, and Matthew's body was found in October.
Matthew Shepard was a gay student at the University of Wyoming in 1998 when he was beaten and tortured outside of Laramie. He died a few days later from severe head injuries.
Folks think about Wyoming and they think about Matthew Shepard's murder, and that is just a reality.
But Burlingame sees this perception as an opportunity. Like most states, Wyoming doesn't have statewide protections for LGBTQ people, such as making it illegal to discriminate in housing, employment, and public services based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Burlingame says if Wyoming got a law on the books, it would be a big selling point for the state.
When you subvert someone's expectation, people pay attention.
And Wyoming needs a selling point right now. After its most recent energy bust, the state lost 25,000 jobs. A group called Endow is working to diversify the state's economy. One of the things they're looking at is more tech jobs.
The beautiful thing about the tech industry, it's not going away.
That's Eric Trowbridge, the founder of the Array School of Technology and Design in Cheyenne. He says there's a reason cities are doing whatever they can to attract companies like Amazon and Google.
What industry has not yet been touched by technology? So if you're able to create a technology hub, you literally are putting this like beating heart of people spewing ideas into every single industry, agriculture, military, retail.
But in order for that to happen, Trowbridge says Wyoming needs to work on its reputation.
People know Wyoming for killing gays.
Trowbridge, who is from Cheyenne, came face to face with this when he established his school in 2014 and was trying to hire instructors. He says his top candidate pick was someone he had worked with during his time at Apple.
I was like, gosh, if I can get this guy from New York City to move to Cheyenne and run this school, like that would be amazing. So started just kind of chatting with him. And then when he started getting serious about it, I remember calling him up and the first question, you know, out of his mouth was, well, so what is the LGBTQ community like in Wyoming?
Trowbridge says he wasn't able to convince the candidate to move here. And that's when he connected with Wyoming Equality. Since then, the two organizations have formed an alliance. Sarah Burlingame says they're trying to help people see things from an economic point of view.
I mean, I think folks need to connect with the economic reality that if we don't pass non-discrimination, we're leaving money on the table.
Burlingame says if Wyoming gets a non-discrimination law on the books, not only would it reaffirm and welcome LGBTQ people, it would also make Wyoming stand out to the tech industry. In other words, if you pass it, jobs will come. But not everybody sees things this way, including Wyoming State Representative Bunky Laux.
I don't want to give ammunition for people to sue people over things that might be perceived, might be real or not.
And this is how a lot of the legislature sees a non-discrimination law. just another regulation for small business owners. Lauk says Wyoming already comes across as friendly to businesses, thanks to its low cost of living and taxation. He also says Wyoming is friendly to queer people.
I've heard from some of the LGBT people themselves that say that it's not. I just don't buy into that.
But Wyoming Equality's Sarah Burlingame respectfully disagrees and says outside the state, LGBTQ people have a negative perception that has to be changed.
People think they already know us. So our job is to tell them a new story and to tell them, here's what you don't understand about Wyoming, and here's why, like, you would be lucky to live in Wyoming, to have your home and your family and your work be here.
The group put together by Governor Matt Mead to diversify the state's economy has identified a non-discrimination law as a key recommendation if the state wants to appear open for business. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Maggie Mullen.
While a statewide anti-discrimination statute is getting more attention as a way to boost Wyoming's economy, it's not a new idea. Over the last 10 years, a bill has been proposed in the state legislature at least six times. Wyoming Public Radio's Tennessee Watson talked with LGBTQ Wyomingites about how the lack of protection contributes to an overall climate of instability and fear.
There are two communities in Wyoming with anti-discrimination ordinances, Jackson and Laramie. Outside city limits and across the rest of the state, LGBTQ individuals who face discrimination aren't protected by the law. But that didn't stop Cassie Willingham from moving back to her hometown of Rock Springs after a few years in Colorado.
It's always strange having to come out again and again and again.
As she settled back into Wyoming, people she met asked if she was married and what her husband's like.
And every time you have to say, I'm actually married to a woman, and then people mull it over for a second. And 99% of the time, they're super kind. It's like, oh, cool.
But a recent interaction made Willingham think twice about being so forthcoming. She and her wife got married at the courthouse back in February, but decided to save up money before throwing the big party. In early September, they decided it was time to start planning.
Yeah, and I got, like, weirdly obsessed. I wanted to have my wedding at this place. It was beautiful. It's, like, top-rated on all of the wedding websites. I was, like, set on having my wedding there and figuring out how to make it happen.
Willingham called the Diamond Cross Ranch in Teton County and left an enthusiastic message.
And I did mention that we were in a same-sex couple, and I even said, like, if that's a problem, let us know.
Later that night, Jane Gallagher called her back.
I answered the phone and she was the most cheery, sweet sounding woman. And she just kept going on and on about how she was so excited that we loved the ranch.
And then the conversation turned.
She wouldn't say the words, but she said, I'm so glad that you thought to ask us your question. And I was like, And she said, and unfortunately, we just cannot endorse that. And I just sat there with a lump in my throat. I didn't want her to know how much it affected me. And I just said, oh, okay.
She hung up the phone.
It was like a two-minute conversation probably. And that was that. We knew they didn't want us.
I reached out to Jane Gallagher, but she didn't respond to my calls. Instead, I heard from her son, Peter Long.
We very much welcome everyone at the ranch.
Long, who's the head of events, told me he hadn't talked to his mom about what she'd said to Willingham, but he was adamant that he was speaking on behalf of the Diamond Cross Ranch as a whole. Yet he wasn't aware of any same-sex marriages the ranch had hosted in the past. Straight brides call up anxious about whether the venue will be available on their date. They don't think about whether their love will be called into question. But for Willingham, planning the big day now had a whole other layer of stress.
We wanted to support Wyoming. We did. But it's too much and it's too painful to try to vet people for homophobia, honestly.
Colorado has a statewide anti-discrimination statute, so she'll get married there next September. In Wyoming, there's more than just wedding venues at stake. LGBTQ folks are also at risk of losing their jobs and their housing.
Hello.
Hey, I'm Tennessee.
Melinda, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Come on in.
Melinda and Heidi welcome me into their cozy home not far from downtown Cheyenne, given the stakes they've asked to go by first names. The house is everything they wanted. It's dog-friendly, well-cared for, and affordable. But Melinda says they aren't sure how their landlord feels about renting to two women in love.
They honestly seem like cool people, and I don't think they would have an issue, but I just don't want to risk it.
So they figured out a plan.
Well, we have another roommate who's a guy. So if it ever gets brought up, we're kind of just like, one of us will just be dating Cole.
Thoughts of relocating to a place where they don't feel pressured to actively hide parts of themselves are unrelenting. But Heidi has a good job, and Cheyenne is Melinda's hometown, so for now, they're staying put. From their house, I head just down the street to the public library to meet up with Izzy, who also wanted to use only her first name. Izzy is a transgender woman, but she's not out at work.
They believe I am a gay man, which is about as much as I think they can handle.
She maintains that front because losing her job would put her entire family at risk.
My wife is permanently disabled. My daughter is disabled. So I basically take care of all these people, and I have to be careful.
Izzy ducks out of conversations at work when colleagues start sharing details about their personal lives, and she avoids public events. She isolates herself to reduce the risk of facing discrimination, or worse, violence.
People make threats. People say things on the internet. I don't know who's real or not. I'm not going to find out.
Izzy laments that for the sake of her safety, she isn't doing more to contribute to her hometown of Cheyenne. She misses getting out and volunteering.
I feel badly for her, her family, and the community.
That's Wyoming's House Minority Floor Leader Kathy Connolly, a tenacious supporter of anti-discrimination legislation year after year. Connolly was the first out state lawmaker, and what I shared of Izzy's story hit home.
That is not only exhausting, but it really detracts from one's quality of life as well as the ability to honestly be all that we can be.
Connolly says that 20 years after the murder of Matthew Shepard, it's time for policymakers to send a message and put it on the books that the LGBTQ community and their contributions to Wyoming are valued. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Tennessee Watson.
Wyoming is a very big state, but people in Cody still felt the effect of the Shepard murder. Although many know about the murder, it hasn't markedly changed the culture in that part of the state. Wyoming Public Radio's Camila Kudelska reports on how Cody's lack of a support system for the LGBTQ community is energizing some to move forward.
Tyler Bruce is from a family of five boys, and he says he was harassed and bullied since he was two for not being hyper-masculine.
I got teased a lot for just being super flamboyant and high energy and stuff like that when I was little. It started off with my family, actually, to be honest.
By the time of Matthew Shepard's murder, Bruce was six and already understood that his family and community wouldn't accept him for who he was. Bruce attributes this to the lack of diversity and education about the LGBTQ community. He recalls verbal and physical abuse at Cody High School where he didn't feel safe.
I worried every single day going into school whether or not I was going to be bullied and whether or not I was going to be happy coming back from school.
He wasn't able to find a support system in Cody. There was no Gay Straight Alliance or GSA club at the high school, but he recalls a teacher standing up for him when a student started calling him names.
Amy Gerber basically looked at this kid and was like, I don't deal with that kind of stuff in this classroom. And she kicked him out of the class.
Amy Gerber is still teaching biology and environmental science at Cody High School. She doesn't remember this particular incident, but she says she has witnessed bullying.
It's more name-calling, I suppose, than anything else, but I've never seen any physical violence or anything of that nature.
But Bruce says he was physically abused and attacked. He finally came out when he was 17 and was kicked out of his home. He finished high school and left Wyoming. For Gerber, Bruce's situation became highly personal 5 years ago.
My son came out to me when he was 14 years old.
Her son, Ted, who is a freshman at the University of Wyoming, says while his parents frequently discussed LGBTQ issues, the community didn't. He thinks that needs to change and favors adding a gay straight alliance club at the high school.
I think that it would be very important for Cody High School to have a GSA because even if you are in a place that oftentimes seems like it can just flat out hate you for who you are, that still shows that there are people there who do care about you and who do understand you.
His mom has already tried to make her classroom more welcoming by hanging a rainbow flag in her room. And she's asked students whether they would like a GSA, but the LGBTQ students were afraid it would put targets on their backs. Cody High School senior Ben Wambicki sees things differently. He's been openly gay since the beginning of his junior year, and he's made it his mission to try to create a gay straight alliance or GSA club at the high school before he graduates.
I would want to educate more about the LGBT community because I think I can count on one hand the amount of times that LGBT people have been mentioned in any of my classes.
Wambicki says a support system is providing an education which could help avoid those suicidal thoughts LGBTQ people feel when their friends and family are turning on them. But he admits it won't be easy.
I'm worried there could be backlash from the school board, honestly. I don't know. Some of the members have said things in the past.
In Park County School District 6, which Cody is part of, the school board has to approve all clubs. And according to Wambicki and Gerber, the school board hasn't looked favorably at such things in the past. But Wambicki wants to try.
If we waited any longer, it would be just not right. If we want a support system, there's never going to be a good time.
Wambicki believes people are becoming more tolerant in Cody, but he says because of the lack of diversity in education, there still are a few who don't understand. He's still very optimistic that there will be a support system for those in the LGBTQ community by the time he graduates. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Camila Godalska at the Center of the West in Cody.
Ahead, we'll end the show with a story exploring why the arts have become so intertwined with the legacy of Matthew Shepard. This is Open Spaces.
Welcome back to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Caroline Ballard.
And I'm Bob Beck. It's been 20 years since the brutal murder of Matthew Shepard in Laramie. One of the most enduring legacies has been a wide and diverse collection of artistic responses. Wyoming Public Radio's Cooper McKim explains.
Ordinary Boy is in the prologue of Considering Matthew Shepard, a three-part orchestral and choral work. It was written by Craig Hella Johnson. The concert moves through the life and death of Shepard and the resulting trial, alternating in genre and perspective. In the production, Johnson wanted to show how Matthew Shepard was more than a story.
I've got to include Matt in this piece, not just Matthew Shepard, the iconic name.
The concert is touring the country now. It's the latest major contribution to the canon. But Shepard's death compelled a lot of artists to respond in unique ways over the past 20 years. Countless paintings, musical interpretations, poems, and theater. It's even been a story arc in popular TV shows like 6 Feet Under and West Wing.
Lady, I'm not embarrassed that my son was gay. My government is.
Art has become central to the story of Matthew Shepard's death. Johnson says it allows something deeper than just reading news clips.
We come together, we grieve together, we ask our questions together. So that alone is one, you know, significant aspect of a way that performance and performance art, music, can hold a story and give us deep possibility for processing.
The first major artistic work to do that was the Laramie Project. Lee Fondakowski is the head writer. She was in Laramie just weeks after the attack, talking with locals and gathering interviews, along with the Tectonic Theater Project. She says the play is still relevant today. It continues to be wildly popular, especially in high schools. Like Johnson, she sees art as playing a role in the conversation.
The art, I believe, kind of elevates the discourse, or elevated the discourse, so that we could really look at it from many, many different perspectives and come to a deeper understanding, both of the magnitude of the loss and the meaning of the loss.
Fondakowski doesn't think the Laramie Project was necessarily the reason for all the art following it. She says the tragedy was bound to galvanize artists.
There was something about his heart, his, you know, I can't think of any other way to say it, just his light, his life force. There was something that just moved people to want to investigate further and to want to make art by.
With 20 years of distance from Shepherd's death, artists have had the time to investigate unanswered questions. Some wondered where Shepherd would be now at age 41. Others explored the religious aspect of his death, seeing it as a crucifixion or him as a martyr. Leslea Newman was coincidentally in Laramie to speak about gay rights the day Shepherd died. She had her own burning question.
What happened at the fence? Now, Matt, of course, can't tell us because he is no longer with us. So then I had the aha moment. There were witnesses. The fence was there. The moon was there. The stars were there. Animals were there. What could they tell me?
So in 2012, she published her book, October Morning, A Song for Matthew Shepherd. It's told through fictitious monologues from perspectives like the stars, the fence he was tied to, and passing animals.
And really just tried to come up with some truth. Not the truth, but my truth.
The Matthew Shepherd Foundation is giving her this year's Make a Difference Award. Jason Marsden is the head of that foundation. He was also a personal friend of Matthew Shepherd. He imagines the stories, artwork, and poetry will help this story live on.
Like all historical events, memory of it will fade if there isn't some compelling and emotionally powerful way to keep the story vivid to people. People in high school now weren't alive when Matt was murdered, so these works are the only way that people will ever have a vivid, emotionally resonant experience of this story.
Marsden says the artwork has changed since the event in 1998, with more context, new perspectives, and distance. But that even new works, like Considering Matthew Shepherd, are a gift for anyone who continues to fight for equality and acceptance.
Out and alone on the endless empty prairie.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Cooper McKim.
The moon bathes me.
Thanks for listening to Open Spaces. If you'd like to hear the entire program or individual segments, go to our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. And you can sign up for our podcast there.
Our website is also where you can become a member of Wyoming Public Radio. Listener support helps us bring you the kind of news you expect and rely on. Pledge online at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Thanks to Consperari and Craig Hella Johnson for allowing us to use music from Considering Matthew Shepherd throughout our special today. Anna Rader is our web editor. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.